we're ever going to get the right person, knowing where everyone was is getting to be really important. That's what I would say.
So we have several issues we need to clear up with Casey's timeline. Exactly when did he leave work on Monday? How did he get home? And did he go home on Tuesday to change before work? And if he did, how did he miss the mess of the crime scene? If we're going to get to the bottom of this, we need to find some of the people who were working at Sonic on the Monday Rebecca disappeared. Taylor has been texting one of our local contacts who was working at the Sonic around the time Rebecca was killed. They mention a story we have also heard from multiple people, that Casey had gone home between leaving work on Monday and returning to work on Tuesday. This person claims to be in communication with a couple of other people who allegedly spoke to Casey about this. If we could find a way to absolutely verify this information, it could be a game changer.
His story was consistent in the beginning that he did not go home, right? So if we can even, if he did, even if he, we get him to admit, yeah, I went home to change shirts, or we find someone who can absolutely verify that he said that, that he mentioned going home to change shirts, or that the timeline was a little weird, that right there is enough to reopen the investigation, because he was, by Charlie's own words, suspect number one.
Charlie was the first officer on the scene. He was the one who found the blood in Casey's house.
And the reason they ruled him out was because of his airtight alibi. If we can poke a hole in that, then they've got it. They got to take another look. They have to.
Like, I really just want to talk to these people who were working at Sonic. I just want to know how he got home, when he went home, and if he actually did go home.
In September of 2004, 22-year-old Rebecca Gould was brutally murdered in a remote area of the Arkansas Ozarks. 14 years later, her killer is still out there. I've come back to Mountain View with one mission: to get justice for Rebecca. I'm Katherine Townsend, and this is Helen Gone. We're over 2 months into our investigation, and Taylor and I step back to look at the whole murder board so far. So many threads, so many dead ends, so many post-it notes. As I trace the lines spiderwebbing from picture to picture, I see many of the rumors, accusations, and same questions that the town won't let go of. We've followed a lot of leads and investigated a lot of the rumors that we've heard in town. And by following the evidence, we've eliminated a lot of them as likely suspects. JB, Chris, Jennifer, the group theory, hundreds of other names we've heard. But we're having a harder time with Casey. Ironically enough, the first and only person that the police have cleared. Like I said in the beginning, everyone in this case has at least two sides. Is Casey the sweet, caring boyfriend who is head over heels for Rebecca that his friends describe? Or the Care Bear psycho that Danielle talked about? I get a call from someone who has been following the case and the podcast. He dated Rebecca shortly before her murder and had an interaction with Casey that he can't get out of his head. An ex-boyfriend could have an axe to grind, so we have to check his story carefully. But a quick call with Danielle, Rebecca's sister, confirmed that he did date Rebecca and also confirmed a lot of the details he mentions.
Well, me and Rebecca met at a club, which it's no longer open. It was in Batesville. And a girlfriend of mine introduced me and her together. We dated for, I guess it was like 3 or 4 weeks probably. It was like a month or two before she got killed. I mean, our first date was pretty much like we were going to go to the liquor store, have a few drinks, and, you know, just hang out. And it was me and her sister and her sister's fiance at their house. Well, we left and we went to one liquor store and it was closed. We went to the other one and it was closed. So we ended up just drinking what we had. I mean, because that's all there is to do back home, was like buy back roads and drink beer.
Like most of the men in Rebecca's life, he was smitten. But it didn't take him long to realize their relationship could not go further because there was someone causing drama in Rebecca's life. And that someone was Casey.
Casey was not, like, he was just, apparently she had, like, slept with him one time, and he just, well, was, like, ballistic, and she just wanted to be friends. Well, he had, like, showed up there just out of the blue, but I ended up being, like, civil with him and stuff, and at the end of the night, we were all getting ready, like, to go to bed and stuff. Well, he was just staying, like, he would not leave, just not leave. It was, like, very uncomfortable. And, like, they had, like, went outside and talked for a second. Like, he was just bawling and crying and just, like, emotionally distraught over everything. Like, I was fixing to leave. I was just like, screw this. I'm going back home. I ain't got time to deal with this drama. And I was like, your boy out there is fixing to freak out. And if he comes in and starts anything, then I'm going to handle him. He's like, no, I'll take care of it. If he does, he'll be fine. I was like, here he is, you know, acting a fool. I'm like, look, man, I'm just going to shut you down right now. Like, if you want to go, we can go. Otherwise, you need to keep your mouth shut because you don't know me. Like, I mean, she was like all the time. He was like constantly showing up where she was, wanting to know where she was, like just wanted to know where she was at 24/7, just controlling. And I guess he had done that to a couple other people and they didn't really want to like put up with it or deal with it. So they just kind of like backed off. But every time we was together, he was constantly blowing her phone up, like messaging her, like, where you at? What are you doing? Who are you with? I mean, it was just, he was just not very overly possessive of her for them just being friends, which I know she stayed with him on and off, but she would stay there because it was close to where she worked and she didn't have to drive all the way back to Mountview. But then, I mean, he was just emotional, like just, I mean, he bawled and cried like two or three times, you know, that night. Like once, whenever he had got there and like found out that me and her was actually going out, you know, somewhere and doing something. And then at the end of the night, like when they went outside, that was just, he was just like bawling and crying and just, I mean, I just kind of let it go, and I was just like, okay, you know, it was nice meeting you. I'm done with you. If things don't work out, holler at me. And I just kind of left it at that. It was like a month or two later, you know, everybody at work knew that me and her were somewhat dating. They was like, hey, you know, her boyfriend. I'm like, her boyfriend? Like, she was with Casey. I was like, oh, that's not her boyfriend. And she's like, well, she's missing. And I'm like, what? Just his demeanor and everything, like he's controlling. You can tell he's just overly possessive of that. She told me she looked up to the way her dad was and like what he had and what he had accomplished. And like, you know, she's like, I want to be successful in my life. I want to do this. I want to do that. Like, she had so much goals and dreams and ambition. She was just stuck between that phase of like growing up and, you know, actually accomplishing things and doing things that she wanted to do, and then being sucked into, you know, being young, dumb, and, you know, having fun.
As he talks about a relationship with Rebecca, a picture of what she was going through at the time of her murder begins to emerge. Rebecca was trying to play down her relationship with Casey. She thought of Casey as a friend with a crush. He was her past, not her future.
He's also, like, very shy and timid.
Right.
You know, like, his personality. Like, I mean, he's going to be loud about something like he was that night. And then once I shut him down, he was just like, okay, I don't want to cross them lines because, you know, I don't think he's been in a fight or anything in his life either. And, I mean, I wasn't too worried about him because he was very, you know, shy and timid. You know, I dealt with ex-drama before with, you know, other people that I've dated, and I just wasn't really wanting to deal with that. I even think I went up to Sonic one time after we started dating to talk to him, and he wouldn't come out and talk to me because the guys from work would go up there and eat and stuff, and I guess he had been up there running his mouth about me, saying he was going to beat my ass, and he was doing this, and he was going to that. And one day after work, I just went up there and was like, hey, man, you got a problem? He's like, no, and he just run right back inside. I mean, I just want to see something that I can't believe it's just gotten, I mean, it just kind of got very, like, you heard a lot about it when it first happened, like, she was missing, everybody find her. And then once they found her, it's like everything just kind of went hush-hush.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't release no information. They didn't release. The only thing that I remember them releasing was that Casey had been cleared. That's the only thing. As possessive as he was, if she left, she supposedly left and went to college, and he didn't hear from her, he would be flipping out that night.
Right.
He wouldn't be out partying and drinking. I can tell you that right now. Just from his demeanor, he's not going to be out partying and drinking and be like, oh, you know, I mean, because obviously he went home the next day. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever. I mean, it don't make sense. Wish you the best. You know, I mean, just be careful of the people that you're around up there. I mean, it's just a bunch. I mean, it's such a small town.
I really wish I could get Casey to talk. We have two questions that need answering. One, did Casey go home at any point between the murder and work the next day? And two, how did Casey get to his friend's house after work? We need to lock in what Casey was doing on the day Rebecca was murdered, because we're hearing conflicting stories about his timeline and his relationship with Rebecca. But one of his coworkers must know something. So we focus on tracking down one of Casey's friends who also worked at Sonic, the same friend he was out all Monday night with, Laren. He was pretty easy to find, because it's not like Laren is a common name in the area. He suggests meeting at a Starbucks in Little Rock, near where he lives.
I hadn't talked to him in a couple years, and my mom's always like, I saw Casey at the dollar store, you know, he's doing well.
He's married now.
Yeah, got a kid I see on Facebook.
Laren is huge, 6'9". When he smiles, he looks like the kind of guy I'd want to have a beer with, but he's also very physically intimidating.
And then once we started working together, me and Casey got real close. There's history there with basketball, and then music was what me and Casey were, you know, we really connected about.
Y'all were in a band, right?
No, he was, well, he was. Right. But he was a great musician, and I loved music, and, you know, no, I wasn't so inclined at the time. But
what were Rebecca and Casey like as a couple?
They were very lovey-dovey. They were very just sickening, you know, that kind of thing. Like, if you
get a room?
Yeah, yeah. And, gosh. They, and it was, like we said, we were like, be guarded, because he seemed more into her than she was into him, just being honest, you know. But she also seemed like she was just trying to start fresh, like she was trying to get away from all that shit. And she really was. But they, as a couple, they were just doing like, lovey-dovey. I mean, I can't even, that's what I was thinking, trying to think yesterday too. Like, my mind's been racing for the last 24 hours, trying to remember, like, little stuff. And, you know, I couldn't remember how long they'd been together when that happened. I can't remember when I was told that she had been murdered, like where I was or what we was doing. I remember the investigators, and then I remember, you know, of course, you know, us trying to, you know, minute by minute break down the day before.
What did the investigators ask?
They asked, you know, like, what did you guys do? They were more interested, and I'm pretty sure having all of us sit down that went that night and telling them the story to make sure it wasn't something that we were blowing smoke, sure, or whatever, you know, because it took them a little while to get the camera and the receipts and all that stuff. But they were more about the night, you know, wanting to know where Casey was. Did he ever leave at any time? You know, did stuff like that, you know. And, you know, obviously we all slept that night eventually. So, I mean, that was another thing that I'd like, is it possible that could have got up in the middle of the night, left my house, and then come back in the amount of time that we were asleep? And I just don't think it was possible. All of us had pretty loud vehicles, and at my place, we liked to be able to hear people coming and going. We were always afraid cops were going to bust or something. Yeah. And that was another thing. They were like, you dude, they're like, look, they're like, just be transparent. We don't give a shit about weed. They're like, we're not trying to bust a bunch of teenagers smoking weed. Like, you know, obviously we're trying to, yeah, we all had a good time together, but it was, God.
So I just, one more time, though. So the day this all happened, Monday, so you guys left work.
God, that was on Monday.
It was all on Monday.
When we got home, we would have watched wrestling then, so we would have probably been up a little later.
But Casey wasn't with you guys then. He rode with Philip.
I think.
Because I don't think he had a car at the time. That's the thing.
Oh, so I know for whatever reason, he was without a vehicle.
Where was Casey's truck? And if Rebecca drove him to work, how was he planning on getting home?
I remember specifically he didn't have a vehicle, because when we got back home and he started saying, like, man, I can't get a hold of Rebecca, I'm kind of worried about it. We were all like, dude, let's just go to bed. She's fine. Because we would have had to take it, which we probably should have. Or maybe we would have walked in and got murdered. I don't know.
Do you remember what time y'all went to bed that night?
Seemed like we watched a normal, like, 7 o'clock movie. And then came back, and we probably did our things. Smoked a lot of weed. Probably midnight, 1. I mean, it's a normal night. I'd have to just guess on a normal night, because I.
Was he, like, he seemed totally normal that night, or?
No, I don't think. Because, like I said, it seemed like. See, this is the part where it's like, I don't. If I'm just trying to remember it that way, or if that's the way it was, but it seemed like there was like an understanding that she was about to have a confrontation that was going to be something that she was, that he was like, I hope it goes well.
Yeah.
Something like that, kind of looming. Like, you know, she had some things she had to take care of. That's why she had the truck. And she was going to try to, I don't know. I don't want to say that and then that be, you know, completely off.
Yeah,
but I feel like that's what I remember.
Laren doesn't remember a whole lot. And to be fair, it has been 14 years. In my experience as an investigator, people tend to remember specific detail around crucial events in their lives. But Monday started out as just an average day.
There's no way I could say intelligently on who worked that day.
No, fair enough. I mean, yeah. Is there any way, like, if one of y'all wanted to take time off during the day, you could have?
I mean, all the time. Like, hey, I need to go run and do something. Sure. We were all really close, so if it was like, I need to go do something, yeah, sure, whatever. You know.
What time did Casey finish usually?
At some point, he went to just days. Like, he didn't want to work nights anymore. But that was the nature of the store, was like, you sometimes, like, your schedule could look like this. Monday, you could open at 7 and get off at 1 or 2. You could come in Tuesday 11 to 4. You could go 4 to close on Wednesday. You
right.
could come back in 6 to 10 on, it was just always. But Casey eventually got to where he just worked days, you know. And he was, you know, he, as far as good cooks at Sonic go, you know, he was one of the best we had, you know. So we always had him in the prime times. Once we left the store, I know for a fact that he was never anywhere but with us.
Right.
And the moments leading up to that, which I'm pretty sure she dropped him off. But if she, if he worked that morning, she would have dropped him off that morning.
Yes.
With his truck, and then he would have worked. And then he would have waited for one of us to get off work to rode out to my place, and then we would have went out. But I can't remember how he got to our house. And also, I don't remember why we went back to my house, because we could have just left and went to Walmart and hit to baseball. But it may have been a change, smoke, who knows. But I do know that for a fact, we wound up back at my place, then back to Batesville, and then back to my place. And he was with us, you know, the whole time. And then we slept, and he got up the next morning and left. But I don't want to say Philip. I don't think I worked that morning, the next morning. For some reason, I seem to recall, like, watching him and leave, you know? I was excited when you called because I want to get, you know, closure to this. But that's how it's going to happen, is now going back, piecing things together, things that you didn't think were important, because when it happens, you know, you can't focus on, so, I don't know, I watch too many shows.
Seem to be a few people who may have had a motive, and
sure,
it was, you
sure.
know, it's a tough one.
Yeah, and then when you allow yourself to be objective, like, you know, going forward to remove myself from, you know, Casey being one of my best friends ever, you start to think, like, well, how, you know, and I mean, that's it too, is you got to know where that is to get to it. Have you ever been there? Yeah, I'm sure you have.
Driven by, but it's.
That was another thing that got me, and I know we're chasing rabbits here, but
cool.
I've got all the time in the world. See, that was another thing, was if you look at, like, if you know that area well enough.
I do now.
If you're from Mountain View, why go back through Melbourne to where they found her body? You know?
Right.
Like, I mean, maybe, like, if they see me going through Mountain View, they're going to fuck with me, because they always do. You know? Maybe I'd rather go through Melbourne, or, you know, or is it because, you know, like, did they go through Mountain View and then come all the way back around? Because they're like, well, that's an obvious place, honestly. Like you said, like, having watched, that's an obvious place to dump a body.
The two towns Laren is referring to are Melbourne and Mountain View. What he's explaining is, in order to dump the body, if the killer was from Mountain View, he or she was going out of their way.
There's so many places out there that I can think of 3 or 4 different places that we partied on Highway 9. You know, just places that you wouldn't know unless you knew, you know, like old cabins off in the middle of nowhere, that, you know. But they...
So you think it wasn't a good spot to dump it?
No, but I mean, I'm from that area. My stepdad's always like, if I was ever going to kill somebody, I'd dump them in the salt mines of Gine. You know, I'm just saying, like, there's more...
My dad says the river, sure. But, yeah.
But that just... I don't know. I find that weird that... Because... I've always felt and had the belief that it was somebody from Mountain View, somebody from that old clique. But yeah, but why go back through Melbourne? You know, I mean, was you trying to get to that spot? I mean, if so, that's probably the quickest way. But if you're from Mountain View, everybody goes back to Mountain View through Gine, if you're on the Gine Road.
Yeah, it's quicker.
It's quicker. It's more secluded. I don't know. I've just always looked at that and thought there might be something there. Like, why go through Melbourne? Like,
did they or you or anybody ever, like, party at Casey's house?
No, actually. No. See, his dad, I think, was driving a truck or something.
Yeah.
Like, I really didn't even know where he lived for, like, the longest time. So, because he just didn't live there. It was his dad's place. You know, so he would stay with Patrick or, you know, whoever, you know. And even to this day, I think I've been in that place one time. And it was the time that I met his dad. And I want to say that was before all that.
Laren claims to have been one of Casey's best friends at the time. And he didn't even know exactly where Casey lived.
But at the same time, like I said, it was kind of a rare thing for us to get him away, like, because he was so involved, you know. So I remember thinking, like, all right, Casey's going out, you know, we're gonna, let's, you know, get down, you know, party. And since it was, you know, such a rare thing, was it planned to be that way? You know, it's freaky shit that you think about when you start watching these shows, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty clear he went through. I mean, it's pretty, it's just the mystery is, like, who in the world would do that at someone else's house and then clean up? That's the really weird. That's one of the weirdest things about the case.
I didn't know they cleaned up. I thought it was left a mess, and that's how they found out. Like if I'm telling this story to somebody, a friend of mine now, I say, she was murdered, and they had a piano leg missing. I said that what we heard was that she was, for the longest time, was that she was beat to death so bad that there was enough blood that went through the mattresses, through the floorboards, and to the underpinning of the trailer. And that there was a piano leg missing, and you could tell where somebody had drug a body out the door. And then later we heard that it was a gunshot that had killed her.
Oddly enough, this is actually the first I'm hearing of a gunshot.
So, like, that's like, I don't know. That's what I tell my friends. I don't really know how, you know, how it all went down. But I said, apparently it was brutal, whatever happened, you know.
I mean, did Casey ever talk to you about who you thought did it?
I'm sure. Like, I'm trying to think. Like, at some point, it became something that we just didn't bring up.
Of course.
Because it was like,
it's like the black
hole. And it's not to be mean, but at some point, it was like, and you don't want to say, like, get over it. But at some point, you know, you just get to be like, look, why bring it up if it's just going to be this thing, you know, this thing, you know. And so it became this thing that nobody talked about, you know, because we just wanted Casey to feel, you know, to feel better. Like, you know, we wanted so bad for him to, and that's like why whenever, you know, he met, we were like, yeah, thank God.
Yeah.
You know, but then now, you know, I'm glad he's with, I think,
yeah,
and happy.
That's good.
Know, that's great. That's great. It's just crazy how you can feel so passionately. But when someone's taken from you, it's different. But you can feel so passionately about somebody, and then it just wind up not being right, you know?
Well, listen, thank you.
If you need, if you think of something and want to run it by me, then make me think of something or help
me
to remember.
Absolutely.
Like, that's...
I find it odd the various ways Rebecca and Casey's relationship has been portrayed. I hear from her sister that she wanted to break up. I hear from his close friends they were inseparable. And I hear from a relatively neutral party that he was obsessed and couldn't leave her alone. You're listening to Hell and Gone. We'll be right back. Talking with Laren, I find he's frustrated with how significantly the 14 years has fogged his memory. But we keep talking. Shockingly, Laren tells me that he was never brought back in for questioning after Rebecca's body was found. It's also incredibly frustrating that in a case where everything hinges on an alibi, so many details of the timeline were vague. Since this interview, we've received the official police statements from some of Casey's friends who were with him on the day Rebecca was murdered. And since Laren was one of them, his statement helps us clear up some questions we have about the timeline. Casey's truck was parked in Batesville, and they all drove Casey to pick it up. So we can reasonably believe that Casey had his truck on Monday night and into Tuesday morning. Laren also says that they left Sonic at around 4 p.m. We know that Rebecca dropped Casey off that morning, and we had always heard that Casey told police she was planning on going back to school. That's why he went out with his friends that night and stayed out all night. But if that's the case, why was he telling his friends that Rebecca was supposed to pick him up and never showed?
I also can't get the last sentence of Laren's statement out of my head. It said, "When we returned from Batesville, Casey used my phone. After he hung up, he stated that Rebecca was missing. That's when it really seemed odd that he didn't head straight out the door to find her." Taylor and I have both been working day and night to try to contact every single person who may have been at Sonic that day. Okay, so I just talked to Bruce, and he confirmed that he was working at Sonic that day. And Casey was the cook, and he said the cooks went on their shift between 8 and 9 a.m., and he remembered Rebecca dropping Casey off at work because he knew her. He said the last thing that happened, she pulled in, Casey gets out, she drops him off. He said she waved at him, and that's the last time he ever saw her. She drove off, and he said that Casey's shift would have ended at about 1, between 1 and 2, but that means he could have left as early as 1.
Casey was on the early shift that Monday, which meant that his shift would have ended between 1 and 2 p.m. But Laren said that the group didn't leave Sonic until later, at around 4.
Now, Bruce did say, you know, the cops came around, and he said if he left, he would have had to clock out because the, you know, where you clock in and out's right next to my desk. But then he went on to say, when I was asking how Casey got a ride home, because he said he confirmed Rebecca dropped him off that day. And he's like, well, you know that town, everybody's friends, everybody gives everybody lifts. Like, so if it's that easy to get in and out and, you know, drive around, then yeah, I mean, it would have been so easy for him to get a lift from anybody. I asked him the important questions about Casey. He didn't volunteer a huge amount. He did answer them. He didn't volunteer a huge amount. I know they're really good friends. He said that, I'm sure this is gonna get back to Casey. He will now. He'll know that we're asking when he clocked in, when he clocked out.
According to police, Casey's alibi was airtight, but our investigation has poked some holes in that alibi. First, the timelines and the statements that Casey's friends gave to police were vague, so there could have potentially been missing time in the afternoon. Secondly, Bruce told me that he would have seen Casey if he clocked out, but Laren, Teresa, and other Sonic employees have all told me that Bruce went in and out all the time. Finally, Casey lived just a few miles away from Sonic, just a 10-minute ride down the dirt road cutthroat we took. And Laren said that it was not uncommon for the employees to unofficially clock out to run errands. This means that there could potentially have been time unaccounted for in the morning.
Well, I'm still kind of confused as to why she had to have been murdered around like 10 a.m.
Time of death, I'm not a pathologist, but just from like reading a lot of autopsies and the pathologists I talk to, I know time of death is very difficult to determine even under the best circumstances when the body's found right away. And it's partly based on when the person was seen last anyway. According to the physical evidence, I just cannot believe. He would have literally had to be, in order for him to be ruled out in this killing, he would have had to have every single moment of his day documented on camera from Monday morning and through to the next day.
We've now talked to Teresa, a car hop who not only was a friend of Rebecca's, she knew Jennifer and Casey. We've talked to Bruce, the manager on duty that day, and Philip, Laren's roommate. We're starting to get their individual stories and piece together the details from that day. As we do, we hear something we've never heard before. Someone mentions that they heard Casey dropped his truck off at Sonic on Sunday evening and drove home with Rebecca. This detail floors me.
How the hell did his car get to Batesville? And how did he get back?
So according to the official statements, Casey's friends drove him to pick up his car in Batesville on Monday afternoon. So if Casey's truck was at Sonic on Monday morning, how did it get to Batesville by that afternoon? According to the police statements, Casey told his friends that his father drove his truck to Batesville. But we had always heard that his father, who was a trucker, was on the road that day.
The mystery of the truck has like bothered all of us so much since the beginning, because at the end of the day, even the question about where it was for the next few days has bothered me. Because Charlie said that Casey didn't have his truck at Sonic the next day.
The whole reason he was ruled out is because he was supposedly had no transportation and was there all day. So the minute you start saying, okay, he wasn't there all day, and actually he did have transportation, and his transportation mysteriously was in Batesville by that afternoon, unless someone drove his truck.
This is a huge piece of the puzzle. According to the police, Casey was the prime suspect at the beginning of the case. He was only ruled out due to his airtight alibi. That alibi hinged on two factors: that he was at work all day and that he did not have transportation. If Casey had his truck at work, that changes everything. The more we dig into Casey's timeline, the more questions we have. And unfortunately, Casey won't answer them. We'll be right back. I'm shopping in Walmart, one of the few places in town with cell phone reception, when I get a text message. It's a potential witness. I'm looking at turkey decoys and guns and people in camouflage gearing up for hunting season, and my hands are shaking as I read it. He says he knows Casey and has something he needs to tell me. When I get back to the car, I call him. Because he knows Casey, he doesn't want to be identified, so we've disguised his voice.
I just got your text. This is Catherine. Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, we just want to find the person who did it. We're not, you know what I mean? We don't care about anything else.
Yes, ma'am. Me and Casey and a guy named probably tell you the same story. Like, he's in prison right now, but, and on like four different occasions, because I know four for sure, Casey was drinking two of them nights and not belligerent drunk, just crying belligerent. He said that he killed her, and y'all didn't find the weapon, correct?
Well, the police haven't shared any information with me, but we've found a lot of, you know, we've gotten a lot of information. Did he say where the weapon was?
He said he put it in the river on the way to Highway 9 from Guyon. And this happened, like I said, four times I can remember. And then one day he was just, something had been wrong for 3 or 4 days, and he just wasn't himself. And when he wasn't drunk this night, and he said the same thing, he said that his story was, and I didn't really think much about it until I heard. I didn't know that she'd been hit with a blunt object like it was. I never knew any things. And he said that pretty much that she was telling him that this would be the last time that he saw her, or she'd be the last time to see him, because they were, I guess, coming to an end. I didn't know her personally, but they got into it, and she said some offensive things to him. And the way he said it, he just lost it. And he said, next thing he knows, he's cleaning stuff up. And he said they almost had him, but they couldn't, because they thought the timeline was different, because he was supposedly at work when that happened. But he said they had the timeline mixed up on him.
Did he say he went home from work, or?
He didn't know, ma'am. He did not say that. And I just didn't know if he was just blown smoke, but it's bothered me for a long time. But here the last few weeks, because I saw that thing, something on Facebook saying who killed her back, and you come on the radio and it just kind of took me back down there.
Well, listen, I so appreciate you doing it, and I know,
just been thinking about that happened to mine, I'd probably want, you know, at least closure.
And I know that he's your friend, and I know that it's got to be hard, and I really, really appreciate it. If we do have to go to the police with this, would you be willing to come with us?
I've got a bad history with the police, and I probably could.
You know, my dad is a really good guy, and he's a deputy sheriff, and then there's the Arkansas State Police. Just so you don't have to go in Melbourne.
If they come down to it, I had to. The thing that really got me was because I never knew. I didn't know how they killed her. I had no clue.
Sure.
And then somebody, I was at my new job, and they were talking about it, and they said the cop said it was a blunt object. Because I always thought Casey was just bullshitting me. Never, I thought he's just blowing smoke. And then when he said he hit her with a wooden object, I know that much, and it was bigger, like baseball bat. Not a baseball bat, but, you know, extreme logistics.
Mm-hmm.
On his way, he stopped on the guy bridge and threw it out.
Wow.
I don't know how you prove it. I mean, I'm just saying, he said that more than once to us. And like I said, it's bothered me for a while.
Well, and I am going to have to go to the police with it just because I have to. I mean, I would really love it if we could go together. So that's why I know he's your friend. I know it's hard, but like, I want to get, you know, this person caught.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, listen, thank you so much.
As investigators, we can't draw conclusions from a single witness. So this may not be the evidence that's needed to finally close this case, but it might be the evidence that blows it wide open. I'm Catherine Townsend, and this is Helen Gone. Helen Gone is a joint production between How Stuff Works and School of Humans. It is written and recorded by me, Catherine Townsend. Taylor Church is our producer and story editor. Audio editing and design by Jonathan Sleep. Mix engineer, Glenn Matullo. Audio mixing and love by Tune Welders. Executive producers Brandon Barr and Elsie Crowley for School of Humans, and Connell Byrne and Chuck Bryant for How Stuff Works. Our field producer is James Morrison. Our researcher is Sandy Klosterman. Theme and original score by Ben Solie. Available wherever you get your music. To dig into the investigation, please visit HelenGonePodcast.com or follow us on social media.